I'm back in the saddle again, out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly gypsum weed. I'm back in the saddle again, riding the range once more, toting my old 44, where you sleep out every night and the only law is right. Back in the saddle again. Whoopee-tie-i-o, rocking to and fro, back in the saddle again. Whoopee-tie-i-a, I go my way, back in the saddle again. I'm back in the saddle again, out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly jimson weed. I'm back in the saddle again, riding the range once more, toting my old 44. Where you sleep out every night, and the only law is right.
You know, I like that, toting my old 44. Yeah. But I doubt whether Gene Artery ever toted a 44 in his life. Maybe to protect himself from the fans at the Angel games or something like that. Well, it's September the 18th, 2017, and we lived through another weekend. How about that, boys and girls? Haven't been hit by one of those North Korean rockets yet. Boy, I'm expecting one any day, though. First time he did that fly over Japan, I was there. I was on a visit to Japan, and that was quite the newsy item. That little guy flew a rocket right over our head. Better not darken my bathtub again. A note here from Stray Dog, one of our good buddies from back east. Shot spotter system was installed by the city. Police patrols have stopped shot spotter. It's a listening microphone planted 75 feet above the street level. Cops can even listen to loud arguments over the system. In a sense, the system hears most any noise outside, especially at night. Operators need to check your local cities to see if they too have the shot spotter system. Weather forecast, northeast, progressively colored summers until 2023. Bitter cold winters, summer casted only 10 weeks here, lasted only 10 weeks here this year. Stray Dog, yeah. Well, I'm afraid they already tried that in Chicago. That shot spotter, it was a failure, you know, because there's so many goddamn shots being fired around that Chicago town that they couldn't zero in on them. It was a failure. So if they spent much money back there in New Jersey, they wasted their money. Unless they've got more tame Negroes that don't shoot off a whole bunch of cartridges at one time. Told you, I think about 3 weeks ago, I heard in the distance around here somebody fired an automatic weapon. Sound like a machine gun. Whoa, boy. I get continually questioned why I moved back to California, and that's multiple reasons. But I was tired of Indiana. And to be perfectly honest, there is no ideal place in this whole North America anymore. You're not going to find a 1950s place anymore. those were the ideal years, I think, to live in this country, but that's gone and it's not coming back. So wherever you move, you're going to have problems, and there's going to be lots of problems everywhere. Let's take off here with a speech that Rand Paul gave to the people in Washington, D.C., that nest of vipers, that dirty cesspool. Of course, it won't go anywhere. It's a great, great speech, but you might as well be whistling Dixie. But anyhow, let's play it. Get away, Rand. Give them hell.
Senator from Kentucky.
I rise today to oppose unauthorized, undeclared, and unconstitutional war. What we have today is basically unlimited war, anywhere, anytime, any place upon the globe. My amendment would sunset in 6 months the 2001 and 2002 use of authorization of force. What does that mean? This was legislation passed many years ago to go after the people who attacked us on 9/11. I supported that battle, but I think the mission is long since over. I don't think that anyone with an ounce of intellectual honesty believes that these authorizations from 16 years ago and 14 years ago, I don't think anyone with intellectual honesty believes that they authorize war in 7 different countries. Not only is it the lives that we are losing, the American soldiers, the brave young men and women who were sent to distant lands and asked to give their life for their country without the Senate taking the time to authorize the war, I think that is terribly unjust and should end. There are some who argue that we don't even need to vote at all. Some of the presidents, Republican and Democrat, have said they have Article 2. This is the second article of the Constitution. They say by the Constitution they can do what they want, when they want, where they want, and that Congress doesn't never has to approve their authorization, never has to give authority to go to war. These advocates of perpetual war argue that these powers are implicit and that no one can stop a president that wants to go to war. This is diametrically opposite of what our founding fathers thought. Madison, in particular, disagrees. Madison wrote that the executive branch is the branch most prone to go to war. Therefore, the Constitution, with studied care, vested that power in the Congress. You see, our founding fathers saw the history of Europe as the perpetual history of war. Brothers fighting brothers, kings of two different countries who were cousins, brothers, uncles, fathers, sons. The history of Europe was perpetual war. When we broke away, we said, we are going to have some checks and balances in place. We are going to make it difficult to go to war. We are going to vest that power in the Congress. But somewhere along the way, we lost our way, and we now commit ourselves to war, or one man or one woman commits us to war without any vote by Congress. This is not what our founding fathers intended. Former President Obama, when he was a candidate, wrote that no president should unilaterally go to war unless we were under imminent attack. That is the understanding of the Constitution that most originalists take. And yet, once President Obama was in the White House, he bombed 7 different countries. He expanded the use of executive power. He expanded the war-making power of the presidency, even all along saying, well, he was for a narrow interpretation. Candidate Trump said that the war in Afghanistan had lost its purpose, that it was a disaster and should end. He said this on maybe 15 different occasions. And yet now that he is in the White House, the generals have said, we must fight on. We must continue to fight. If we leave, the Taliban will take over. Is, when will the Afghans stand up and fight? We've spent $1 trillion helping them. We spent billions of dollars trying to convince them not to grow the poppy that becomes the opium that addicts the world. And yet last year, Afghanistan had the biggest crop of poppy they've ever had in recent history. The people who run Afghanistan that we put into the government, the Karzai family, full of drug dealers, crooks, and thieves. You wonder why they're not popular in their own country. But my question is, where'd the $1 trillion go? How come they can't defend themselves? How come we have to fight their wars for them? But the one thing is for certain, the war was not authorized by you, the people, and the war was not authorized by us, the Congress, and therefore the war is unconstitutional. The war is unauthorized. You say, well, do we ever get it right? Do we ever vote to authorize war? Well, yes, we have. When we went to war in Afghanistan the first time, and I would have voted yes, there was a vote, and overwhelmingly we voted to go in. Some have argued, well, 6 months, is that enough time for Congress to do anything? Can they get anything done in 6 months? Well, when we were attacked in Pearl Harbor, you know how long it took us to declare war? 24 hours. When we were attacked on 9/11, how long did it take us to authorize the military force to go in? 3 days. And people say, well, Congress will never get it done. Maybe it's because we're divided, we haven't been attacked, we have no clear purpose in Afghanistan, and there is no clear route to victory. Realize that President Obama in 2011 put 100,000 troops into Afghanistan. Sure, he pushed the Taliban back. Where did they go? To our ally Pakistan, who has gotten billions and billions of dollars of American welfare, and as we sit here, is destined to get another $500,000 in your money in American welfare over the next month. Billions and billions of dollars we send to Pakistan, but where does the Taliban live? In Pakistan. They run back and forth across the border. So we have to ask the question, what is our purpose? Are we nation building? You know, we spend hundreds of billions of dollars building their roads, building their bridges, building their schools. They bomb them, we bomb them, somebody bombs them, then we rebuild them again. We've got $150 billion worth of damage in Texas. You know how we should pay for it? Let's quit sending welfare to foreign countries. Let's look at our country first, rebuild the problems we've got here, rebuild our roads, our bridges, our schools, and not borrow it, not add to a $20 trillion debt. Take the money we're sending in welfare to foreign countries and let's rebuild our own. We are at war in 7 countries, none of them voted on by Congress. Is it expensive? Yes, to the tune of trillions of dollars. Today we will debate the issue of war and whether Congress is constitutionally bound to declare war. We will debate whether one generation can bind another generation to perpetual war. We are at the point where we've been so long in Afghanistan that people are fighting. Within the next year, there will be people fighting who were not yet born at the time of 9/11. This war no longer has anything to do with 9/11, has no longer anything to do with any vital interest of our country. It has to do with us believing that we can reshape the world and make the world safe for democracy. Everybody's going to love America and everybody's going to become a Western-style democracy. Guess what? It's never going to happen. Afghanistan's not even a real country. It's a collection of 5 or 6 tribal lands that were stuck together by Europeans who had no knowledge of the local people. They don't even like each other, much less us. They are not a country. They will not listen to Kabul. You know what they call the president who resides in Kabul? They call him the mayor of Kabul, derisively, because he has no sway over them. They're interested in who their chieftain is in their local area. They speak 5 different languages. They're never going to be a country. But if you want to be at war there, you want to send your sons and daughters to Afghanistan, you think somehow that's going to make our country safer, let's vote on it. So what I'm advocating is a vote. For the first time in 16 years, I'm advocating we should vote on whether or not we should be at war. Should be a simple vote. But you know, it's like pulling teeth. I've been trying very hard to get this vote for 5 years now. I'm this close, hoping we get the vote today or tomorrow, but it isn't easy because we've been obstructing and obstructing and obstructing, and no one wants to be on the line. Well, that's why we were elected, to put our name, put our John Hancock on the line. Are you for the war or against the war? I think I'm done. I'm done. I'm ready to come home. I remember my father saying in one of the presidential debates in 2008, they said, how will you get the people home? He says, we just marched in, we can just march out. There is no more meaning or purpose in Afghanistan. We had 100,000 troops there in 2011. All of the Taliban scurried into Pakistan, and as soon as the troops diminished, they came back. And some people take from that lesson, they say, well, we need 200,000, or we need 500,000 troops, or we need to stay there forever and police every corner for them. I take it to mean that the government themselves over there do not have the popular support of the people. Stand up and fight for your country. Half of the people in Afghanistan who were helping us over there came to our country. They fled. Same with Iraq. All the good people in Iraq, our translators, the pro-Western people, they came to our country. Now, I understand wanting to come to a good place, but it'd be like the people who signed the Declaration of Independence after they fought the war and America won, going back to England and saying, oh, it's dangerous in the new country. But that's what we've been saying year after year. And so the people who have pro-Western values from Afghanistan now live in the United States, and the same in Iraq. The thing is we need to have some tough love. They need to practice some responsibility, and they need to take ownership of their country. But as long as you coddle people, as long as you give people stuff, as long as you fight their wars for them, they're not going to step up and fight. We are going to debate whether Afghanistan is a winnable war. We will also debate whether war in Yemen is in our national interest. Most of America doesn't know we're at war in Yemen. Most of America doesn't know where Yemen is. And we need to know why we're there and whether it's of any value to the United States. We will debate whether our support for Saudi Arabia is exacerbating starvation and the plague of cholera in Yemen. We will debate whether it is in our national interest to topple the government of Syria. 2 million Christians live in Syria. Guess what? We may not understand it, but most of those Christians support Assad. On the side of the war that we've been funding and arming with the radical Islamists from Saudi Arabia and with the radical Islamists from Qatar are the people who hate the Christians. We're fighting on the side of the people who hate the Christians in Syria. Does that make Assad a good guy? No. But the thing is, maybe there's sometimes no good person in a war, no good side to a war. For 5 years, I've been fighting to have a vote on whether or not we should be at war and where. I think there is no greater responsibility for a legislator than to vote on when we go to war. I tell the young soldiers that I meet that it is my responsibility to discuss, debate, and think seriously about whether we send them to war. And one of the things that's most mistaken by politicians, even some who are well-intended, they think every soldier in America is jumping up and down to go to their eighth tour in Afghanistan. Go out and meet the soldiers. They are not allowed to be politically active. They are not a political force on Washington. But I guarantee if you were to ask our soldiers, are you ready to go back for your eighth tour of Afghanistan? Do you see purpose in Afghanistan? They've lost sight of what that purpose is. I met a Navy SEAL about a year ago. He'd been in for 19 years, tough guy, they all are. And he said to me this. He said, you know what? We can defeat any enemy. We can kill any enemy. We can succeed at almost any mission you give us. But the mistake is when you, Congress or a president, the mistake is when you tell us to go somewhere and plant the flag and create a country. We're just not very good at nation building. We have the world's most elite military. We can defend our country. We can defend without question against all invaders. And yet, we are not very good at making countries out of places that aren't. And what we should think about is we have a $20 trillion debt. We borrow $1 million a minute. Even if you thought it was a good idea to try to create a country in Iraq or create a country in Afghanistan or create some sort of paradise in Yemen or Somalia or Nigeria or Libya or any of the places we are, even if you thought some paradise was a great thing, we have no money to do. We are eating out the substance of the very greatness of America by borrowing $1 million a minute. We are flat broke and we can't afford to be everybody's Uncle Sam. We can't afford to be everybody's Uncle Patsy. We can't afford to keep exporting our money and our jobs to the rest of the world. We need to look at our country and say, it's time we did things for our country, for our people, and it's time we quit borrowing $1 million a minute. The question is, will the senators, will those who gather to vote, will they stand for the rule of law? Will the senators stand for congressional authority for war? Will they stand for what?
Well, this goes on for a ways, but hell of a good speech. How many hell of a good speeches have you heard in your lifetime? I've heard hundreds, maybe thousands. Some of them I've even given myself. What changed? Nothing changed. He's just, unfortunately, just talking. Even though it's good talk, and I agree with him, he's got to know it's going nowhere. In fact, the Senate is almost empty. You can see all the seats around him are empty. Well, there's one guy down front to his left. This is off of C-SPAN, too. This black guy that looks like he's got about a 25 IQ. I could tell pretty much that he's opposed to the speech. And over to Rand Paul's right is standing, I think it's Nikki Haley, that bitch who never saw a war she didn't love. She's standing there listening intently, but I know she hates his guts. She is a real Mata Hari, that bitch. And she's her parents came here from India, and all of a sudden she's a governor of a southern state where all those racists live. And now she's... I think that's her, but maybe not. I don't know. Anyhow, she's a bitch if she's not there. Now, maybe with the Chinese and the Indians maybe going to war pretty soon, maybe Nikki Haley can grab her parents and go back and defend the home country there, India. Yeah, that'd be a good job for her. You could stand on the border of that disputed land over there and throw rocks like there's Chinese and the Indians are throwing rocks at each other. Unbelievable. Here's a letter I received from Richard Scutari just lately. Greetings, kinsmen. I received both your letters and the postcard. I was not sure if you needed a new visiting form or not, so I included one just in case. So I sent out a new visiting form today or yesterday. So hopefully one of these days I'll be able to go up and see Richard. I never read Mason's book Siege. When I heard that he made a hero out of that homosexual rat, Charles Manson, I had no interest in reading the book. Manson's girls had more balls than he did. Well, I understand your position there. I never supported Charles Manson too either. And I told all these guys, a few of them were into that they were nuts and he was a con man and the whole bit. But some of them are still out there following him. However, I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater because I believe Siege is a very good book. So he must have written it when he wasn't under influence of Manson. Speaking of a book, I finally have a copy of Unbroken Warrior. Everyone laid it on pretty thick about me. It made me wonder who they were writing about. I'm just a lowly soldier who was stupid enough to get himself caught. Anyway, I appreciate the offer, but you do not need to send me a copy. What I would like is a few copies of the articles in Liberty Bell that you mentioned. George Dietz used to send me the Liberty Bell while he was alive. I agree with you, it was a great publication with excellent contributors writing the articles. And of course, Liberty Bell material is available on our website. Because Bob, when he was working with us, transferred it, copied it. Okay, let's see. I'll save my comments about the rallies and Antifa for our visit. One thing I will say about the Trump phenomenon, it is making whites numb to being called racist. Yeah, I like that. Hopefully whites are waking up to the fact that their values, culture, and history is no longer wanted in their country. Well, I just wanted to get these visiting forms to you soon. Take care and stay safe. Hope to see you soon. I'll let you know when you are approved. Yeah, Richard's only about 3 or 4 hours from me, so that's pretty damn close, a lot closer than we've ever been before. Once I get the visiting forms, I'm just going to hop on a Greyhound and go up there. I don't want to drive. I don't like to drive anymore. And at night, I get a little night blindness, too. I'm not decrepit yet, but it's a lot cheaper in the long run to get on a bus. However, if I'm on a bus going pretty much towards the prison, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of Negroes on there going to see their girlfriends and boyfriends. It might be an interesting trip. Oh well, I can spend the time talking to them about the Jews. Yeah, always got something to talk about. I see here U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley, the Indian, declared that the U.N. Security Council to have run out of options for dealing with the North Korea problem. You haven't run out of options, just back off. You don't have to do anything and watch it simmer down. But you're bound and determined to get us in there. This is in comments made during an interview on CNN's State of the Union show. She talked up a shift in unilateral U.S. military option. Now here's a woman. She's, I guess, maybe 30 or 40 years old. Her parents came to this country from India, and all of a sudden she's a governor, and then all of a sudden she's an ambassador, and she's determining what's going to happen to you and your kids and your men that are going to have to go fight something. We've got, I don't know how many 100,000 troops in the Middle East over there now, because they're ready for it. And we want it, our wonderful politicians. But here's this Indian breed deciding your future. Doesn't that bother you a little bit? She should be back over in India determining their future, what they're going to do about the Chinese. Federal prisoner who sends me some documentations of FOI stuff from the FBI and so forth. It's funny that he does a better job getting FOI material inside the prison than I get from normal people involved in the struggle. I don't think most of the right wing even know how to fill out an FOI form. Anyhow, his name is William White, and he wrote a good article. I'm going to read it to you whether you like it or not. Thanks to the support of the AFP readers. I don't know what the AFP is. This AFP writer has been able to force the release of seals and protective orders that have been keeping the public from secret FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force documents showing the extent of an illegal counterintelligence operation which targeted, in words of a former FBI JTTF informant, David Gleddy, law-abiding citizen. An internal memo written by FBI SSA Andrew Lenzer, one of the supervisors of this operation, has confirmed what we already knew, that the FBI, using tactics learned from the Soviet Bolsheviks, set up a network of phony white supremacist organizations as part of a disruption operation designed to sow paranoia among American citizens and disrupt the fabric of American life. This official confirmation of Gleddy's memoirs was an important step, but with the release of the seals, even more shocking documents have come forward. Shortly after a protective order was released in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Virginia, the FBI released documents showing that in 1975, through an informant named Robert Brennan, I remember him, it created the National Socialist Movement, America's Nazi Party, as what it calls a national, notional, a phony organization designed to draw membership away from legitimate white nationalist groups. Well, I think that there are not too many legitimate white nationalist groups, or if they are, they're infiltrated up the ass. The documents also show that shortly after 9/11, the FBI JTTF ordered the National Socialist Movement and other groups to hold notional neo-Nazi rallies across the United States, while simultaneously ordering anti-racist groups, also controlled by the FBI, JTF, to attack those rallies. The goal was to use the violence to justify diverting public counterterrorism funds away from the fight against Al-Qaeda and ISIS and towards a fight against their own law-abiding American citizens. But it gets worse. Documents released to date also show that as part of its counterintelligence activities, the FBI JTTF controls a network of satanic cults. There we go with that satanic stuff again, including the Teens for Satan organization and the new Bihar Mandir Temple, which has populated allegedly using drug addicts and pedophiles recruited out of the federal prisons. These cults are not only used to recruit people willing to do anything as counterintelligence agents and to target foreign nations like North Korea and Russia, but also to infiltrate and discredit white nationalist organizations by associating white nationalism with satanic pedophilia. I think this is a sort of a reach here. I'm not sure how much I go along with that, because I don't see that much power or anything in this so-called satanic movement. I know the Christians like to talk about it all the time, but I think this is a little bit out there. There has been much more coming out, and the extent of these kinds of phony FBI JTTF political networks is amazing. According to what I have discovered in the white nationalist movement alone, the FBI JTTF has employed an estimated 3,000 persons since 2001 as impersonators of white supremacists and has even instructed these informants to commit hate crimes against the random non-white citizens, including at least one high-profile hate murder as part of an effort to create racial paranoia. The FBI also murdered or attempted the murder several American political dissidents, which it declared to be terrorists. This operation is only one of the several countering violent extremist operations which targeted dissidents, including a similar parallel operation which targeted patriots and constitutionalists with similar tactics. And to top it off, we have the personal file of FBI JTTF Task Force Officer Robert Killian, who was fired from his position for conducting unauthorized investigations, part of his close relationship with the Southern Poverty Law Center, which appears to have corrupted and suborned law enforcement officers involved in these activities. All of this has come out because of the support the AFP readers who have funded my efforts to exonerate myself from a series of false federal indictments brought against me during the course of this operation because of my outspoken advocacy for white working people against the forces of the New World Order. My expert investigators say that FBI JTTF paid informants to hack my email and Facebook accounts, and then to use them to commit crimes. Then following this, the U.S. Attorney's Office deliberately, falsely charged me with those crimes using perjury and forged documents to obtain multiple convictions for transmitting essentially anonymous internet threats. This fight is ongoing and expensive, for contributions are what allow us to present to the federal courts something which they rarely see, and that's the truth. I think this William White is the guy that was running the National Socialist Group down in this, in Virginia or down south, and a few years ago. Yeah, I think it's the same guy. Well, I don't know about this guy. I don't know. He seemed like some of the things he did were a little wacky. I don't remember exactly what they were, but they seemed wacky. And I think going off on this thing that it's somehow a bunch of Satanists involved in this could be partially true, but I have problems with that. I mean, they could have their convention in a phone booth. As I recall, William White actually sort of talked himself into prison. I don't remember all the details, but it seemed that he put his head in the lion's mouth and expected the lion not to chomp him down, because at one time he was free, he'd beaten a couple of charges, but then they stacked a couple of more onto him. So anyhow, you may remember White, but he's still around. Here's a little blurb from Horrible Harry about the St. Louis deal, the riots going on back there. After the events in St. Louis, it's not only obvious that niggers need their own police, fire department, and paramedics. The rules in greater, or as I call it, bigger nigger town, must be changed to allow their vibrant behavior. Sure, we evil racist Nazi bigots call such behavior savage and moronic, but that's because we are bored, we are boring and uneducated. This morning, NBC showed a picture of the police officer that shot the nigger. He looked like an S.A. Brown shirt, and I'm sure he had a locket with Adolf Hitler's picture around his neck. Next to him, they showed a poor Daquan or Letitia, or whatever the fuck his name was, holding a niglet in cornrows. It was the first time in 20 years he had put down a pistol and crack pipe to hold something else. The white cop must hate babies because he refused to hold one in the picture. In fact, sources tell me that NBC handed him a baby to hold as not to be biased against him, but he grabbed it by the feet and swung it into the wall. Only Negroes care about children. I saw it on television. Niggas broke out of the mayor's windows with rocks, which I call postcards from Africa. Congratulations, Mayor Dipshit. You're the proud representative of Big Nigger Town. Good luck with that. Thanks, Horrible Harry. That enlightens me quite a bit. A letter from an interested party. Thank you for your time and advice. They asked me for my advice quite a bit. I don't know how good it is. I would ask you to send more, especially how I may be of service with any writing skills I may have. What's your opinion of Odinism for people of our interests? Do you have a group you would recommend, or do you think it's better to go it alone? Well, I have no quarrel with Odinism. Many of my friends have been Odinists over the years, and a lot of our imprisoned order members are Odinists. So that's okay if you need it. I've got one religion, that's racial separatism. I don't really need another one. The only problem with Odinism is if you get drunk on that stuff. For instance, Wyatt Kallenberg was a good friend of mine for years and worked with us on the paper and everything else, but he got so deeply into Odinism that it was just unbelievable till he couldn't think of anything else, and he finally bolted and went off on his own, and I don't know what the hell ever happened to him. he became an Odinist fanatic. And I think an Odinist fanatic is just as dangerous as a Christian fanatic. So I don't, if you don't absolutely have to have a crutch, don't have any crutch at all. Your crutch is your race and your white skin. That's all the crutch you need. So I'll tell this guy, if he wants to write something up, go ahead. And if it's radical enough and hateful enough, we'll print it. My original reply to this guy who was whining about debating some Jew, some rabbi or something, I said, arguing with this imbecile, unfortunately, is a total waste of time. I don't want to be equal to anyone. If they say that's white supremacy, then so be it. I certainly don't want to be white inferiority, which is what they want you to accept, not superiority. You're inferior. If you're going to write, talk about that kind of stuff. Write boldly and to the point, and again, don't waste your time on the opposition other than laughing at them also. Tell them that they're whistling past the graveyard. Speaking of religion, I'm getting actually harassed by some identity people. And I have friends that are still identity. But these people are insistent that that's the absolute only way, and if you don't go that way, you're bad. You're going to go to hell. And I keep telling them I'm not interested in what they're selling, but they keep sending me these emails and cluttering up my computer. And I keep sending them back stuff that says there was no Jesus, and that infuriates them. But I just want them to leave me alone. I've been through all that. I've been through all the forms of Christianity. I've been involved in just about every Christian church there is, including Identity Christian. And I'm through with Christianity because you've got to understand Christianity is at the basis, or Judaism is at the basis of Christianity. I mean, how can you miss that? I mean, you know, if it hadn't been for the Jews, there wouldn't be any Christians, even though most of Christianity is a copy of Babylonian and Egyptian religions that came before. Now here I got a question from an emailer. I am a member of an organization known as White Aryan Resistance based in Arkansas. Well, that's impossible because there's never been a membership organization called White Aryan Resistance. And I know it got started with one guy who wanted to use it back in the old days, and I let him use it for a week or so, and he was going wonkers, and so I contacted him and said, cease and desist, and don't use White Aryan Resistance at all. So he wants to know if I follow the same things as you do, and if we were the same organization. I do my best to follow the 14 words and the 88 precepts. Well, I didn't write 14 words, and I didn't write 88 precepts. That's David Lane. He gets the credit for that. And he certainly wasn't a member of White Aryan Resistance. However, he was a good friend. I've been told that we were followers of you. Well, I don't want people following me. I want people out in front of me, leading the way, or at least beside me. I don't want followers. Followers don't get you anywhere. I've never thought to ask this question in my past, and I would like to know if we are the same organization. Could Tom Metzger please answer that question for me? It got started really in the prison, and they do that all the time, and they recruit a whole bunch of people claiming they're something they're not, and this has been going on for decades. And I keep telling these people in the prison and out of the prison, White Aryan Resistance was never a membership organization. And no one is permitted to speak for Tom Metzger or John Metzger. Not at all. But they keep doing it and pretending they're something they're not. So if you know anybody that's trying to run under the label of White Aryan Resistance, based in Arkansas or any place else, there never was such an organization. We never had a membership card. We never had a special flag. We never did anything an organization normally does. We've always been pretty much on your own, lone wolf. Now here's a letter I dug out of the Liberty Bell from 1992. There's a lot of great letters in there. Dear Dr. Oliver and Mr. Dietz and Liberty Bell readers, Dr. Oliver, thank you for your 28th of July 1992 reply to my letter. I've also studied Greek and Latin and the ancient histories of the white races, and I find it truly painful to watch the death throes of my race in America. Ancient history is repeating itself, only the white race is too ignorant to see itself dying the same old death. This says a lot about the white race. The white race must be defective because it has not learned the lessons brought forward by historians from ancient times. If we keep choosing self-destruction, we deserve to die like the mongrel dog that we've allowed ourselves to become. The Jews and the Negroes are absolutely right in describing the white race. White Americans are despicable and are as a whole a genetic disaster. Yeah, I'll say that. You can walk into Walmart and see that. Hopefully, myself and other dinosaurs of the present times will carry on the study of far more perfect eras than our own for posterity's sake. Even those decrepit Romans were more noble than this rabble of degenerate whites of today. I can only admire the Jews and the Negroes for what they've done for themselves. I think that's a little sarcasm there. I am witnessing a creeping cancer in the patriotic movement that I cannot stem. This is the British Israel, or the now so-called Christian identity movement. These people call themselves the racial descendants of the people of the Old Testament. These ignorant whites take pride in calling themselves Semites, or the descendants of the Hebrews and the Israelites of the old fable book. I cringe every time I hear this response. Nonsense. Well, I plead guilty. I was involved for a few years. Let's see. Maybe 5 years or so. My request is this. I hope you can start me and Liberty Bell readers in the right direction to counter these Christian identity dupes until they see the bigger lie that they have swallowed. They cannot find the truth. Without the truth, there is little hope that someday the white race may unite, fight, and survive the upcoming real Holocaust. The only good news is that when the old establishment is dead, hopefully Christianity will die with it, along with the other barbarities of religion. Please do yourself a favor. Age catches us all. The white race in this country doesn't deserve the monumental effort you have exerted trying to save it. Savitri Devi was right in her teaching that the old establishment must die in order for the white race to make the quantum leap into the next millennium and hopefully emerge as one of human perfection. Therein lies a faint glimmer of hope if the white race does manage to survive in spite of its best efforts to destroy itself. It will have necessarily survived the paradigm shift of human evolution. If this should happen, then the white race will have risen far more powerful, strong, and perfect than ever before in recorded history. Our Aryan souls will sing louder than ever with the joy of our newfound strength. Nothing will stop us if this happens. What a glorious thought indeed. Dear sir, drink deep of the great spirit of life. Enjoy. Yeah, that was a pretty good letter, and I've got hundreds of them here. Well, boys and girls, that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow on Tears Day. How about that? And in the meantime, think white, act white, be white, and carry on. Like the man says, or woman, whoever it was, it's not the non-whites that are our problem. It's the white race itself. unless the white race can come back and strong and start kicking ass, it's all over. It will be all over.
meat shit, whatever it takes. They can join the Air Force or join the Corps if they can't make it here anymore. Boxcar door. We can't make it here.